Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women over 50 across the globe. Sometimes it's the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. Some of them may make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Lady Val Corbett. Why is Val a lady? Because her MP husband, Robin Corbett, was awarded the peerage when he decided to vacate his parliamentary seat after 18 years of hard slog with no time off for good behaviour. Lady Val organises a fantastic Women in Business networking lunch in London, the proceeds of which go to support the Robin Corbett Award for Prisoner Rehabilitation. The award gives money to small charities who do the most to enable ex-offenders to rejoin society and get jobs. This is a hand up, not a hand out. Despite being a lady, Val has unfortunately realised that a title makes no difference when trying to get a table at a fully booked restaurant and is yet to get her upgraded on a flight. But she lives in hope. Val lives by the most wonderful mantra I have ever heard. There is a special place in hell for any woman who doesn't help another woman. Thank you, Val, so much for willing to be interviewed. It's a joy.
Thank you. Well, you know that motto, actually, I stole from Madeleine Albright.
Oh, did you? Yes. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. And then one of my women said, I have turned it round. I now say there's a special place in heaven for any woman who helps another woman. And I thought about changing it, but then I thought, no, you know, I feel scared about about going to hell. So, yeah. So I've kept it.
But I think, I mean, the other one is lovely because obviously it's a very positive spin.
Yes.
But that is so hard hitting and so true. Very. And actually, you know, we've been having a conversation before, haven't we? Mm-hmm. That actually so many women don't support other women. So, no. You know, it's a hard hitting quote. I didn't realize it came from Madeleine Albright.
Yes, it did. And, you know, it's a pretty cold business world out there.
It is.
And if women don't help each other, I mean, who's going to?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. So tell us a bit about where you've come from and up to today. How did you get to be doing what you're doing with the Trust?
Well, like, isn't it lovely talking to you about yourself all the time?
I know, you've got 25 minutes of this.
I know.
Milk it, pal.
Okay,
milk it.
I'm going to milk it. Okay, I was born in Cape Town, right. South Africa. And I wanted to get to the mecca of journalism because I was a trainee journalist, which is Fleet Street. Mm. And so I did three jobs and earned enough money to go for the fair. But I had a very tough time, actually, in the beginning because you had to belong to the National Union of Journalists, which I didn't.
Right.
And unless you were an NUJ member, you couldn't get a job. Yeah. And if you didn't get a job, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it was tough. And I lived on hard-boiled eggs for a long time. It was actually years before I faced another hard-boiled egg. Anyway, I eventually got a job and then actually realised my absolute ambition, and I did work in Fleet Street and I did get a column of my own, and I then married my husband. Well, first of all, I married a man that I knew for 4 hours. I know. It was.
We so have to have dinner soon.
Very, very, very romantic.
Over a bottle of wine.
Very romantic, but extremely dull.
Four hours.
4 hours. Well, 4 hours to get engaged. And I'll tell you exactly why, because I did an article, a series for a newspaper saying how to spot the divorce before the marriage. And it was absolutely classic because we were talking, we met at 8, he had come to a dinner party and then asked me out afterwards. And at 8 o'clock, we went to this very romantic place with it was a cellar and the candles on the table. Mm. And he said to me at about 10 to 11, what are you going to do? And I'd been in the country about 18 months then. I said, I'm a bit, you know, I don't know really what I want. I said, I may go to America. I don't know. And he said, well, I know exactly what I want. And I said, what do you want? He said, I want you.
Wow.
I know. And when I interviewed this marriage expert and I told him the story, he said, never underestimate the power of the words, I want you. I just said, okay.
It's very compelling and very seductive, isn't
and
it?
So we got married. Oh my gosh. It didn't last very long, about a year. I cried every day.
Oh.
I cried every day when we decided that it was no good, because okay. I didn't want to be a failure. I'd never been a failure in my life before. Anyway, as it so happens, that was very good. And, you know, this is one of my mantras. The things that happen that you think are terrible might very well be the best thing that happened, because then I met my lovely husband.
Yeah.
And I met him at a magazine we were both working at. And I had a new dress, which it was vomit green. And
you paint a wonderful picture.
I know. And I don't know why I chose it. Anyway, I said to the woman with me, and we were going through a doorway, I said, "Does this dress make me look dumpy?" And her voice said, "Yes, it does." And that was Robin. And he was he's 6 foot three, and I'm 5 foot two. So I looked up and up, and I thought, what a very rude man. Anyway, he called me dumpy for a long time afterwards.
Just sort of stop you there.
Yep.
How did you get from him making that comment to the first date?
Well, it was... funny enough, it was December, you see, and the magazine had a Christmas party. And he took me on the back of his scooter.
Did he now?
Yes.
Moving swiftly on.
Very swiftly on his scooter. But, I mean, it was evolved through, you know, after that, actually. We eventually got married, and we were married for 42 years.
Wow.
And it was a very happy marriage. And I think the happiness was because we were very independent. I mean, we kept on... He was in the House of Commons for very much of the time. Very long hours. And we used to joke and say, well, 42 years married, but only 2 years together. But I think the secret, honestly, I know you're going to ask me this, so I'll just answer it quickly. I think the secret is that we were both independent. I had my own life.
Mm.
And if you rely so much on your partner, I really think that it doesn't make for freshness in the marriage. When Rob and I came together, we had loads to talk about, because he had all that in the House of Commons and all that, although he was bloody stupid about gossip. I mean, he never ever remembered gossip. I mean,
men are hopeless.
It is divorce material.
Definitely grounds.
Sometimes he'd come home and I'd say, "Well, what do you think about so and so?" And he'd say, "What?" I said, "Well, you were there, didn't you?" "No," he said, "No, I knew nothing." Anyway, I think that it is a secret, because when you meet, you have things to talk about. And talking, you know, you so often see long married couples in restaurants when they're picking at their food and they're saying nothing.
Yeah.
Well, that's not because they don't like each other. They've lost the power of speech because everybody knows everything.
Mm.
And therefore, all I can say is have your own life.
Yeah, very, very
and
important.
And your own money, very important.
Very important, own life and own money. Yeah, very financially important. Independent.
The key.
Yeah, it is the key.
Key.
Mm. It is the key. Yeah, that's a really, really good message.
Mm-hmm.
How long ago did he die?
He died 3.5 years ago.
Oh, gosh, not that long ago.
No, it wasn't. And I have to get used to the new normal.
Yeah.
But when he died, I took stock. It's a good time to take stock of your life. Mm. And I realised I was actually very lucky. I had a lovely house.
Mm.
He didn't need much money, but he left enough.
Mm.
I had a beautiful daughter, gorgeous son-in-law, who cooks every night.
Wow.
I keep on saying, where were you when I was looking for a man? a delicious grandson. And all my friends, all our friends, have stayed friends with me, which I love.
That's wonderful.
Absolutely lovely.
Mm.
And the first year, you have to keep really busy, and I did. I travelled, accepted every single invitation, and when there weren't invitations, I made invitations. Mm. So I asked people to dinner and so on.
Mm.
And then I suddenly thought, you know, my husband was a really special man. And I'm not being prejudiced, because apart from the love stuff, I actually admired and liked him.
Mm.
He was a very assiduous Member of Parliament and a very assiduous attender of the House of Lords.
Mm.
And in fact, he was unanimously elected as leader of the chairman of the Labour peers until he died. So, and I got 1,000, I actually stopped counting after, 1,000 cards, letters and emails after he died.
My gosh, that's amazing.
And So I thought, he should have a legacy. He should have a legacy. And this was a game changer for me, because I suddenly thought, what can I do to make him remember? Because this is a silly thing, but at the Ryder Cup a couple of years ago, the Ryder captain was talking about Seve Ballesteros, the Spanish golfer who died.
Yeah.
And he said, and I'll never forget these words, he said, all men die, but some men live on.
Wow.
And I thought,
what a great
that
quote.
Is
That's
exactly
amazing.
What I wanted. Mm. Now, Robin was very interested in prison reform. He thought that sending people to prison for them to come out knowing a lot more about crime was ridiculous. And he said prison wasn't full of bad people. Prison was full of people who'd done bad things. And
big
that
difference.
It shouldn't be society's revenge, but rather a chance to change the direction of a life. So I set up a charity with the Prison Reform Trust, which is a registered charity, which administers my project. I set up the Robin Corbett Award for Prison Rehabilitation.
Right.
And I'm just finished designing with a designer a website, www.robincorbettaward.co.uk.
Right.
And to encourage funding, obviously. But working on that, I suddenly realized how important it is for ex-offenders to come out and know that there's somebody out there and a job.
Mm.
Now, my network just celebrated its 10th year anniversary, and so I got a wonderful project called the Bad Boys Bakery in Brixton Prison, and they baked the birthday cake, and it was delicious. I cut it up in slices and auctioned it.
How much did you raise?
Well, there were 14 slices, and I sold it for £5 each.
Oh, fantastic.
Anyway, and so I'm working very much on that. And, of course, my network, I get no money out of the network because all the proceeds go to the charity. But my rewards are great.
Mm.
Well, I wouldn't be here sitting talking to you.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And the people I met, the women I meet on my network are women who want to care and share because they are attracted to the motto. All thanks to Madeleine Albright.
Good old Madeleine.
Exactly.
Well, you do. I mean, that's where we met a couple of years ago now.
Indeed.
Your network.
And you
and
came and talked to us.
I did.
Yes.
Yeah, I did. I think I've only missed one in the last 2 years, which is great.
Mm.
And it's an amazing atmosphere.
Yes.
And it does attract, because you go into it with the right energy.
Mm.
So you attract women who share your energy, share your values, share your moral, their moral compass is in the same direction as your moral compass. So, you know, like attracts like, doesn't it? I love what you just said about ex-offenders and prisoner rehabilitation and what your husband said, that prison isn't an excuse for society to get revenge, something like that. And I think a lot of people get locked into that mindset. Chuck them in, throw away the key. That's what they deserve. And they don't peel back the layers of the onion and really look at the soul that's living within the living within that human shell. And to recognise that on a soul level, we're all equal. And if somebody has made a mistake in their life, they should not be, that should not hang over them for the rest of their life. That shouldn't dictate the route that the rest of their lives take. So the work that you do through this is so important.
It is important, especially since I got an email only last week from it was one of those emails that people send around saying, if you're an old person, why don't you commit a crime? Because you can go to prison and get 3 meals a day and you have a gym and you have the television and you know,
wow.
It's ridiculous because I have been in prison and I can tell you
it's not it's pleasant.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. The lack of freedom now with the cuts in the prison service, people are locked up for 23 hours out of 24. Some of them. It's hideous.
It's horrible. I've been to a woman's prison.
Yeah.
I think one of the saddest things I've ever seen was the creche in the woman's prison.
I cried.
Broke my
awful,
heart.
Awful.
And that when their mothers are due to be released, people actually have to take the babies out and walk them around in the pram and the pushchair around the streets of London because they're not used to noise, they're not used to traffic, they're not used to other people because they've actually been born into this completely false environment. It broke my heart.
And the other thing that I used to do talk to prisoners, and the thing I couldn't stand is that when you came to a door, it had no knob on it and you'd have to wait for the warder to unlock the door. And apparently when people are in prison for a long time, they go home and they wait for people to open the door. It's a horrible, horrible thing. I don't know why people reoffend, but the reoffending rates in this country are terrible. I mean, now the Bad Boys Bakery has only a 3% reoffending rate. Because they have a skill, they can market.
That's the key, isn't it?
It's the key. And normally, especially among the young people, there's a thing here called Taster of Prison. They send young kids to prison for 6 months.
Right.
And the governors have said to me, honestly, it's too short a time for us to get into the remedial work they need.
Yeah.
Because they think, oh, I've only got 4 months left, three months left, blah, blah, blah. So they're only looking at the prison gate. And so they come out exactly the same as they went in, which doesn't help anybody.
It doesn't help anybody.
And the taxpayers, do you know, it costs as much to send somebody in prison as a child to Eton.
Does it really?
Yes.
Oh,
35 to 40,000 pounds per person, which is exactly what you pay for Eton.
Wow. That is...
Which is the best school in the world, apparently.
I've just come back from India, as you know. We visited a charity in Bombay that works with... that supports boys between the ages of 12 to 18 who have offended. And it could be anything from petty crime up to rape and murder. And it helps, it looks after them. And half the boys in the morning have the normal curriculum education. The other half are doing vocational training. And in the afternoon, they swap. So the vocational training could be how to become a tailor, woodwork, you know, carpentry, metalwork, you know. Mm. So they went at 18, they are left with a choice.
Yeah.
Whether there are no choices if they have no training, because the only choice is to carry on committing crime.
Yes.
Because they know there is no other way for them to start to earn a living. So what you're doing with a rehabilitation is giving ex-offenders the choice that they wouldn't otherwise have.
Precisely.
Which is so important.
Well, I went to one prison who won one of our awards, and it was a stonemasonry shop. And I cannot tell you the professionalism of the stuff I saw there. The quality was amazing. And one of the guys said to me, I don't like being in prison, but if I wasn't in prison, I wouldn't have learnt the skill.
Yeah.
And now I can be a stonemason when I leave.
Amazing.
And I'm also trustee with a thing called Beating Time, which is choirs in prison.
Ah!
And they have choirs.
Great name.
They have choirs. Very good name. I didn't think of it. they have choirs with prison staff, prison officers, the governor, and ex-offenders, offenders rather.
Amazing.
And when they all sing together, they all realise that they are all human. Mm. Barriers are brought down.
Mm.
And of course, the prisoners get a lot of confidence from this, and they mix with people as a team.
Mm.
A lot of them don't know about that. Mm. There's also another terrible statistic. 72% of all male prisoners and 70% of women prisoners suffer from one or more mental illness.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, but the thing is that the prison isn't the right place to sort that out. They haven't got the facilities. No.
But mental illness is far more rife than any of us
think. Of course,
think.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wish I was a dictator. If I was a dictator...
A benign dictator?
No, not so benign.
Okay, well, tell it like it is.
No. What I say will go. None of this business about, you know, asking your advice and asking your opinion. No. I mean, what's the point of being a dictator if you can't get things done? No, if I was a dictator, I would actually... you know what? There was a wonderful program which Michael Gove, the Secretary of State for Justice in this country, which is in charge of prisons, he went to a place in Texas where they are closing prisons because they're doing remedial work.
Yeah,
it was so interesting. I would do far more remedial work. I would put loads of teachers into prisons because a lot of prisoners are innumerate and also illiterate. Mm. This holds them back, mm-hmm. and they have a lack of communication, which means mm-hmm. that they cannot speak about what they feel. Mm-hmm. Not that men, of course, speak about what they feel a lot.
Yeah, but once upon a time, Val.
However, some men can speak about feelings. Even if you say, you know, I'm hungry, I haven't got money and all that, they can't even do that, so right. they go and commit right. crime.
Yeah.
I would do the mental health issues. I would, you know, 5,000 women are in prison as opposed to 80,000 men.
Wow.
A lot of those women are mules from right. Jamaica yeah. and all that. Yeah. Now, they are building a huge prison. We are building, Britain is building a huge prison in Jamaica and the other Caribbean, I think it's Jamaica. So that people in this country who are Jamaican, who were, you know, drug offenses, yeah. can go into that prison and therefore be nearer their home.
Wow.
Which is good. There's one thing this damn government's done that's good. And, oops, that was part of political, wasn't it? So I would do that. I would send lots of doctors in to cater for the mentally ill. And I would close a lot of prisoners and let them do community work outside, but with under strict and stringent conditions, with a tag, and they have to do their bit. You know, and they could be working in old people's homes, they could be clearing up the clutter in the street, or whatever, but they've got to do it. I know somebody who's done work in the old age home, and he was so good, he's now working there permanently.
Wow.
And getting paid for it, by the way.
Wow, yeah, of course, mm. yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, there are lots of things that can be done. As I say, you know, it takes good people to do things.
It does. Yeah. It does. Mm. You're just one person doing all this.
I know, I know.
Where do you see the future?
I would love to see the future of more people saying, it's no good sitting on a couch shouting at the television or doing horrible things, saying horrible things to people on social networks,
yeah.
which is vile.
It is vile.
I think more people should get involved. Mm. I wish more people would get involved. It's so easy to get involved. First on a voluntary basis, and then I used to work with Women's Aid, and our committee was made up of mums who had babies and things and coming out. Well, those mums have gone on to have university degrees. One mum now, her children are grown up. She's now chief executive of a housing association.
She really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so what happens when you come into a voluntary organisation? You learn how to be part
yeah.
of a team.
Yeah.
You learn what is necessary, what we can do. And then you go out and do it. More people got involved, more people would do better.
And it's letting go of our prejudices as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And our assumptions that we class all ex-offenders under the same banner.
Exactly.
Now, this is in the UK, obviously. Do you think that the Prison Reform Trust and the work that it does and the work that the awards do is transferable to other countries?
Absolutely, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think America, if I'm correct, imprisons more people than any other country.
Really?
I think so. Mm. And things need to be done there. Mm. There's definitely things to be done there. Mm. They've also got prisons that are very harsh. Mm. And again, they may think that works, and it doesn't. Mm. It actually doesn't. What works is, I'll tell you about a wonderful organisation that I'm just going to work with, called Mosaic.
Oh.
They meet ex-offenders at the prison gate.
Right.
They arrive, you know, with their goods in a black plastic bag and £36.
Is that it? 36
used to
pounds.
Be 60 pounds, now it's 36.
Wow.
They meet them, they take them to lodgings, they then introduce them to companies who have training schemes for building works and, you know, all sorts of things, and they sustain them throughout.
Wow.
To turn them, it's part of the Prince's Trust.
Is it?
Yes, and
wow.
I think Prince Charles does a very, very good job. So there are things that can be done. You do not have to be harsh. What you need to do to give prisoners hope is some vision of what could be outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Some and hope, in a nut, in a nutshell, that's it.
That's it.
And, you know, taxpayers bear the burden. We spend billions,
of course.
Billions on crime, social workers. And, of course, when a prisoner goes to prison, it's not only he who gets punished, it's the whole family.
Of course.
So, frankly...
Yeah, guilty by association, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And it's in our hands.
It is. And it's about, just to very briefly kind of sum up, because we come to the end, mm-hmm. it's about readjusting the autopilot, isn't it?
Yes.
Because if we're used to going in one direction, and we may go in another direction, but unless you actually change the internal autopilot, so what goes inside your head, your beliefs about yourself and what you can achieve, you will drift back to the same course. So it really is about giving people that support that they can believe in themselves and they can believe in their ability to make their own change.
Well, when I become a dictator, I shall have you on my team.
Marvellous. Can I be your deputy? Fantastic. Thank you, Val. I can't believe we've reached the end. I knew I could talk to you for hours. I'm going to have to get you back. Thank you very much. Fantastic. You've been listening to Katie Day. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.